And good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Please make sure you visit our website, thedgscoins.com. Because then I want to welcome back Dave Allen, and we're going to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Monday, October 5th, 2020. Welcome back, Dave.
Hello, Melody, and thanks for holding my place.
Absolutely. We should have played that song, Welcome Back, Cotter. Remember that?
One of my favorites.
Oh boy, are we showing our age. Probably our listeners don't even know. Yeah, I think they do. I think you all know who we're referencing. Welcome back, Cotter. What was the Arnold? Wasn't that Arnold?
Arnold Horshack.
Arnold Horshack.
And Boom Boom Washington.
Oh boy, oh boy. You remember them all. And let's see. Did you remember about gold and silver while you were gone?
Absolutely.
Well, we had a great day in gold today, ladies and gentlemen. You're looking at gold up $13 at $1,912. Silver is up 59 cents at $24.39. Platinum is up 17 at $899. And palladium was up $74 at $2,426. The USDX today was down 0.36 at 93.47. Crude oil, it was up pretty big, $2.28 at 39.33. And the stock market today, I guess with the news of perhaps President Trump heading home this afternoon, and of course all the drug makers doing well on those that they gave to President Trump while he was at the hospital or in the hospital. I guess he's still there to be released here in a couple of hours or so forth. We had a big day. And, of course, stimulus. That was probably the biggest impact on the markets today. Getting just a little bit closer to that stimulus. The Dow was up 465, 28,148. The NASDAQ was up 257, 11,332. The S&P was up 60 at 3,408. 10-year yields up big, almost 10%, 0.76. And that was probably due, Dave. I saw an article where Goldman Sachs, they're recommending everybody shorting the 10-year. And so I'm sure that has a lot to do with it. And let's see. European and Asian markets were strong overnight, all up over 1%. I guess on the news that the U.S. is ready to do stimulus, since we're the biggest buyers in the world, I guess they look forward to that, hoping it stimulates some purchasing. But, you know, it's just another day in the neighborhood, and again, you know, the big headline news, of course, is President Trump, and we do hope that he is getting better. And we do hope that he does get released, but we do hope that he, you know, does, you know, and we're not going to go into President Trump. That's one thing. We talked a lot about President Trump while you were gone last week, Dave. And so it's good to get back to some of this boring economic stuff. And we're going to talk about the long-term unemployment that is jumping up. And, of course, we've seen that the number of people considered long-term unemployment is making a bounce in recent months. This comes as we talked about the Friday's jobs report, how that showed 3.8 million people had lost their jobs permanently in September. And that's almost twice as many as at the height of the pandemic in April. When the first waves of layoffs hit in March and April, nearly 8 in 10 of the newly unemployed had believed their job losses would be temporary and reported that they were not looking for work. A flood of Americans who had just been laid off pushed the percentage of people who had been unemployed for at least 27 weeks. Let's see. But as the pandemic had raged on, Dave, you know, we're beginning to see the economy in areas begin to unravel. And we have more people that are just sitting on the sidelines for longer.
Well, and even with an additional 11 million people unemployed, then in February, Melody, the percentage of unemployed people who've been without a job for more than 6 months has returned to the same level it was back then. As of September, 2.4 million had been out of work for 27 weeks or more. 4.8 million in additional folks have been unemployed for between 15 and 26 weeks. Now, without a mass surge of hiring significantly above levels seen in September, or even in August for that matter, the tsunami of unemployed, the tsunami of unemployment that economists have been warning about is going to be poised to hit in the next couple of months. Many of those people could be without unemployment benefits when the rest of the pandemic assistance program expire at the end of the year, of course, borrowing a new round of stimulus, Melody.
Well, no, I firmly believe there will be another round of stimulus come the end of the year. And, you know, we talk about the people who actually give up looking for work. And the drop in the government's dubious headline unemployment rate last month to 7.9 from 8.4 was more the result of people dropping out of the labor force or giving up looking for work. The labor force participation rate decreased by 0.3% percentage point to 61.4%. That's 0.3 percentage point to 61.4% in September. And has fallen a whole 2 percentage points from its February levels, and the lowest since March of 1976. Now, if we put that into perspective, the 2.5 percentage point drop in labor force participation just from March to April was the largest in history. And that rebound has only gone halfway and now reversed, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, the employment to population ratio at 56 plus percent is now 4.5 percentage points lower than in February. And women, as we've mentioned before, have fared especially poorly in this particular recession. Its participation rate has dropped to 55.6, the lowest since February of 1987. Now, of particular note, the Bureau of Labor Statistics pointed out that last month about 4.5 million people were prevented from looking for work due to the pandemic and therefore were not counted as unemployed, though that figure, they claim, did decline from 5.2 million in August. The Bureau says on its webpage, to be counted as unemployed by definition, individuals must either be actively looking for work or on temporary layoff. Just another sign, Melody, that we just can't depend on government numbers these days, right?
So how are they counting these 4.5 million people?
Well, they probably, my guess is that they show up, they're not showing up on the U3, maybe not the U6, but I'll tell you what, they're showing up on ShadowStats alternative unemployment number, which includes these chronically discouraged workers who've just stopped looking, and that number is looks to be around 27%.
It's a lot different than the 7+%.
Yeah, indeed. So when you include these chronically unemployed who've just stopped looking, because they can't find it, or they were working part time for economic reasons. I mean, this economy is in a much dire position than what we're being led to believe.
Yeah, but Dave, the stock market is higher. So that means everything must be so much better.
Oh, it's about this time that I think we should be playing band music. something very, with all due respect, patriotic, and something that makes us smile. Alas, I just can't seem to bring myself to play it.
And we should all go to, you know, get on the dance floor as the Titanic's band kept on playing.
There you go. That's right on.
Yep. And, you know, so, you know, it really is, you know, as long as that stock market is higher, it just has set the tone so much of what people think is happening to this economy. And they don't want to know these numbers. And they don't want John Williams' numbers. They don't want to know the truth. And even if they took half of John Williams' numbers as truth, it's still far worse than what the numbers government is producing, and the miscalculations from government and creating new equations just to come out with a number that they want. It really is amazing. It truly is, and no one questions anything. No one.
Well, yeah, no one. I mean, what's particularly frustrating, and I'm surprised by this, that more in the mainstream media, just they don't recognize it either. They just play along with the headline number, and talk as, you know, though we're coming from a place that started at full employment at around 4%, and I'm not sure. Well,
they don't want people to, you know, because, you know, hey, they're all invested and they all have retirement accounts, pension accounts. You know, it's all a personal agenda too. And the analysts today on your mainstream media, they're just told what to say and do most of the time. There's, you know, the higher ups have an agenda, and so in Wall Street, you know, that they'll protect Wall Street, as, you know, again, it's, they're all buddies, and it's a big, and so then we get these numbers that truly don't sign, that show a true economy, and it doesn't really show how disrupted this economy is, and we really don't know. And you got to remember, folks, it's been a year. It was before the virus that things began to unfold. It just wasn't the virus. Supposedly, we were in a recession in February. Not March, April, May, June, July, when it was first announced. But nobody pays attention to it. And, you know, and again, you're right, Dave. You know, mainstream media, as much as they hate Trump, you'd think they'd be all over these numbers, tearing them apart. But just goes to show you they have a separate agenda. Who knows what it might be? But it's, because you're right, they would be tearing these numbers apart. But, so, anyway, U.S. service industries, of course, expanded more than expected in September by the Institute for Supply Management Services Index. And that represents about, 90% of the economy. That climbed to 57.8 from 56.9. And, you know, of course, everything over 50 does indicate some sort of expansion. The September figure exceeded the estimate of what economists were expecting, and that was 56.2. So proving orders and business activity shows a little bit of encouragement. And so, I mean, that goes, again, when you have an economy that's shut down, you're going to see rebound in a lot of these numbers and so forth, but clearly not to the degree that states that we're out of any type of trouble, Dave.
Well, I'm somewhat relieved, I guess, to see that more news outlets now are referring to what's happening in the more recent weeks as in terms of a rebound and not recovery. To some, it might just be a matter of semantics, but as we talk often, words matter, and so if there are upward bounds from month to month, or week to week, I should say. I mean, I have less of a problem as referring to that as a rebound, but certainly. Not a recovery, as I believe we need to see a much longer trend of, at least one, perhaps two quarters or more. In any event, I mean, despite the ISM services index going up, I mean, their chair of their business committee, services business committee, did say there continues to be capacity and logistics issues as these business volumes have increased. And we know, and we've talked about this a lot too, that with the various supply chains around the world having been disrupted, that in some industries just having a harder time getting, meeting demand on the one hand and then getting product to the consumer. On the other. But now the ISM does say that 16 service industries reported growth last month, including entertainment and recreation, transportation, healthcare, and real estate. But as trends go now with the announcement today of the largest or one of the largest cinema companies in the world closing down, I suspect we'll see that number turn around next month.
Well, you know, I mentioned earlier about stimulus, and I'm pretty sure we'll probably see one again by the first of the year. But I guess they're going to have to deal with the budget in December. Is that correct?
Yeah. December 11th. Yeah.
Yeah. So until then, you know, they're Pelosi has said. Yesterday that the stimulus talks was making progress. A day earlier, President Trump had encouraged a deal and that he had tweeted from the hospital that the country wants and needs one. Administration reportedly still sees the best pitch at $1.5 trillion versus the $2.2 trillion wanted by Democrats, with Trump receiving treatment at Walter Reed Military Hospital after testing, as everyone knows. Everything was kind of focused on his health instead of another stimulus bill. And we're going to be focused on this break as we're running out of time. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival. We will find you acting on your best.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Please make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you get there and sign up for our weekly newsletter. And, of course, you can listen to the radio program live at 4 o'clock Eastern Time, Monday through Friday, or the archives whenever you like. So check out the website, dgscoins.com. Heading into the break, we were talking about the stimulus. There's really not a whole much more to say. I mean, it's, you know, it's day in, day out. It's their little struggles to, you know, come to some sort of an agreement. So we know it's going to be between $1.5 and $2.2 trillion. And it's, I don't even know why they're arguing about, you know, $500 million here and $500 million there, Dave.
I know, right? After how the last couple of years have gone, I too would be awfully surprised if there were anything agreed to, certainly brought to either floor before November 3rd. For one thing, both houses are anxious to adjourn for the last few weeks of campaigning before the November 3rd elections, and now with at least two more, maybe three more senators, I think two on the Judiciary Committee that would that will be overseeing the confirmation hearings of Amy Coney Barrett or Barrett Coney. For Supreme Court, if they're going to go ahead with them or if they're going to wait. I don't know how that's going to play out, but certainly this, I think you suggested something that probably has a lot of potential for occurring, and that's a stimulus deal that would be debated in both houses in line with more permanent funding for the new fiscal year, which I guess the funding for that runs out December 11th.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's funny that the Federal Reserve always wanted to talk about their target inflation was under 2, and it just cracks me up. Now, Chicago Fed President Charles Evans said he would welcome 2.5% inflation, just for a time, to average out the current period in which price pressures are running below the central bank's 2% target. He thinks we have to cross over beyond 2% with some momentum. He says he would be quite pleased if we could get core inflation up to 2.5% for a time. And that's if you really believe that it's under that amount. But anyway, his comments followed earlier remarks at a virtual conference where he predicted it would be several years, of course, before the inflation rate, which by the Fed's preferred measure was 1.4% in August, would rise back to the target. So, you know, they want higher inflation, but ladies and gentlemen, it's not going to stop at 2.5%. They might say it did, but if you believe it, then you need to give me a call and explain to me why you believe it. But we haven't seen anything yet in the inflation. And they'll just do, businesses will cover up inflation just like they have in the past. Your businesses, your cereal boxes will stay the same, but you know, you'll get maybe a half an ounce less, maybe a whole ounce less. Looks the same. It fools most of the people. And they pay the same price, but all they're getting is the same package. I mean, it's just everything. Material for clothing is getting thinner and thinner. You cut here and cut there. Export our inflation. You bring trinkets in from China to keep prices low. Now it's all of Asia, I guess, with some of these trade agreements being made and so forth. So, you know, don't let them fool you. Inflation is higher, and it's going to stay and get even higher, making it more difficult for people to live their daily lives. Their energy needs, their food needs, their health needs. Just makes it more difficult, Dave.
It sure does. Evan's also talking about, you know, how the pandemic has affected the unemployment rate, which he doesn't see returning to its, quote, full employment rate of 4%, as we mentioned earlier, until 2023. Three more years. Now, that his own forecast, he notes, does assume that additional federal stimulus is forthcoming. So, a lot of uncertainty abounds out there, Melody.
You know, we're talking about inflation, and we'll do this briefly before we move on. Saudi Arabia, they're predicting $50 oil prices, budgeting for prices to be around $50 a barrel for at least the next 3 years. So while crude at $50 would represent a 25% rise from current prices, it would still be below its pre-pandemic level of around $65. You know, the Goldman Sachs, the too big to fail, they're a little bit more optimistic. They're predicting prices are going to climb to $65 by the end of 2021. Like, Dave, I think this is all based on assuming that our economy and the world economies are beginning to, you know, recover instead of rebound. Maybe move into more of a recovery than a rebound.
Yeah, there's certainly an assumption of robust economic activity that we just don't see, but which more and more main Wall Streeters anyway appear to be using to, you know, manipulate the markets. We know which ones. In any event, you know, Saudi officials apparently affect their fiscal deficit to be reduced to just about 5% of GDP next year, down from 12% this year. Of course, it's easier, a lot easier for them to cut spending to assist with that when the crux of the, you know, any political difference are within the royal family itself, and they don't have to worry or deal with large groups of constituents, political parties, and what have you.
No, they just behead them. If
yeah, that's right. Indeed. So.
Well, you know, this week our newsletter that you wrote about is about banks, and the newsletter will be coming out later today. And again, listeners can subscribe. Just go to the website and sign up, dgscoins.com. And your article this week's is a follow-up to your recent series about money laundering in Deutsche Bank and the other two big-to-fail banks in the United States and all the way around the world. So why don't you tell us about your article for this week, Dave?
Sure. Melody, as you mentioned, our recent series focused on illegal and unethical and just plain bad decision-making by executives who were intent on getting rich quick and making names for themselves at storied and now infamous institutions like Deutsche Bank. The shenanigans began way back in the 70s and 80s. Sure, they were going on in different aspects for decades longer, but really took hold in the years leading up to the start of the financial crisis in 2007. Besides money laundering, we wrote about two former Deutsche traders who were more recently convicted for manipulating, of all things, the price of gold and silver. And now, 12 years after the Great Recession, one can reasonably argue that depositors, investors shouldn't have to doubt anymore whether they can trust the way banks measure their financial strength.
Wow. Do you think? Do you believe that? I mean, there's a lot of reasons for skepticism. And, of course, people really, truly, the distrust just keeps growing, though, Dave.
Well, it does. And last week, the Bank of England signaled that some of the lenders in its banking system may be purposely underestimating the riskiness of home loans. Banks that use their own models to make these calculations, typically the bigger, the supposedly more sophisticated lenders, assign an average risk weight of 10% on their mortgages. The measure is low compared with historic levels, and it's certainly a fraction of the 35% risk weight that lenders assign to real estate borrowings when they use a standard model rather than their own customized approach.
And that's a troubling discrepancy, isn't it?
Well, it is, and then some. I mean, even for loans that ought to be of the same quality, lenders are coming up with different risk metrics. Between banks, figures vary from 4 to a 17% risk weight. That's according to the Bank of England. You know, that's a 4 times difference. With banks sitting on hundreds of billions of pounds of home loans, their judgment on the riskiness of mortgage has huge repercussions on their financial resilience. I mean, even more so in the midst of a pandemic. In short, the Bank of England's concern is a bright red flashing flag. Banks are required to hold a minimum amount of capital against loans after making adjustments for their comparative riskiness. This exercise of calculating so-called risk-weighted assets is, well, it's certainly tedious, if not hugely complex. Outsiders, even auditors, generally don't have the means to question the result. The consequence is that banks can appear safer than they actually are if their calculations produce a lower risk-weighted number for their assets than, say, a more conservative approach might produce. And by conservative, I mean more realistic.
And, you know, you're talking about UK banks, but they're just not alone. I mean, in facing fresh scrutiny of their models.
Oh, my gosh. Apparently not. Now, we're going to discuss the U.S. experience in our blog on Friday to bring this week's series to a close. But Sweden's regulator, for example, the Riksbank, their country's biggest bank, Svenska Handelsbanken, to switch to a standard model instead of its own internal model when calculating the risk it takes at its British subsidiary. That portfolio account consists of mainly commercial and residential real estate holdings and accounts for more than 10% of the group's total assets. Now, as a result of the switch, the 149-year-old Swedish bank's core capital will take a pretty big hit when measured relative to risk-weighted assets. They'll be required to take about 1.6 percentage points off of June's 18.7 Tier 1 ratio. And then even for a bank that claims to be one of the strongest in the world financially, this erosion of, we'll say, its resilience to a major financial downturn isn't a mere rounding area. Yet its capital buffers still comfortably exceed the demand of regulators. But Handelsbanken's premium valuation on the stock market, That's largely a function of its reputation for conserving capital. But then, so was Deutsche Bank in its golden years of the last century, and look what's happened to it. The Swede regulator, anyway, Riksbank, said simply that the time has come to use the same calculation of UK asset riskiness at both a subsidiary and group level, and that the move wasn't, I repeat, wasn't retaliation for basically the UK's upcoming hard Brexit.
But this, Dave, this isn't the, I don't think it's the first occasion that risk weightings have been questioned.
Well, it turns out, Melody, that Britain's Metro Bank is also being probed by the Bank of England for scoring some of its assets too generously. And regulators there fined the Citigroup about $57 million worth of pounds, in part because the firm underestimated its risk assets of its UK division. Good news is that Europe's lenders won't be able to rely as much in the future on their own customized models for calculating risk. Tougher rules are poised to be phased in starting in 2023, and that could lead European banks needing about $159 billion worth of fresh capital for their balance sheets. Now these reforms won't completely solve this problem, and they're still 2 years away, but with the pandemic, where it is now anyway, there's been a general mood of leniency, unfortunately, all around the world. So you've got things like leverage ratios and other technical things that are being eased to make it easier on supposedly for the little and middle size banks, but we all know it rewards the biggest banks the most in terms of actual dollars. So I guess the moral of this story is, Melody, for all of us to stay vigilant, stay informed, and stay involved.
And stay in gold.
Indeed. Most importantly.
And stay listening to Financial Survival. We're just about ready to head into our second break of the day, and the last break of the day for this program anyway. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm happy to announce Dave Allen has returned. He's in the building, as they say. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Let's go ahead and talk a little bit, you know, something, and again, we're not going to spend a lot of time on some of these articles, but they're important reminders that there's a lot of other things going on in this world and in this country. And, of course, it seems like the California wildfires is sort of put on the back burner. You don't see major headlines anymore and so forth, but they have passed a grim milestone. The state's wildfires have now torched a record 4 million acres so far this year, and charring more in the last 9 months than the past 3 months combined. Five of the state's six largest blazes ever have occurred this year amid a combo of hot weather, dry brush, powerful winds. And the August complex burning in Tehama County is the biggest ever. The more than 8,200 blazes since January, 31 people have died, 8,400 homes and buildings have been destroyed. Number of acres burned is more than double the previous record that was set in 2018. And it truly is amazing. You have firefighters continue to battle the inferno in Northern California's wine country. A lot of vineyards have been burned and destroyed. Last fire has charred more than 64,000 acres and destroyed more than 1,200 homes. So that should just about be over, I believe, Dave. Their season, their wildfire season, should soon be over, I would think.
Well, we can only appeal to our collective mother nature. I mean, come on, give these poor people a break. I mean, apparently there are lighter winds due in the area this week after apparently a week-long gusty experience. So November is coming, Californians and our Western friends. Hang in there. We're thinking about you.
I'm not sure what I haven't followed this next story, and it's about the world's. I saw the headline but didn't pay any attention to it. The world's first blank check ETF. I mean, Wall Street will do anything to keep the money coming in.
How about it?
Made its debut last week, and for the SPAC. The SPAC stands for Special Purpose Acquisition Companies. And I'm going to call it an SPAC, is a company with no commercial operations that is formed strictly to raise capital through an initial public offering for the purpose of acquiring another existing company. So it's kind of like... What's it kind of like?
It's kind of like Terminator. You know, it's a beast that, of course, it's a little different. They're beasts that exist solely to knock off specified individuals. This is a little bit different. they're a company that doesn't exist, but exists solely to acquire other companies through the IPO process, as you said.
Yeah, so there's no companies. It's kind of like, what are those accounts called that you can set up to get money? GoFundMe. So this is kind of like a GoFundMe thing, only in a ETF form.
That's an interesting analogy. I like that.
Good. But that's what it is. GoFundMe.
Effectively.
Yes. So, but it's known as black check companies. Supposedly, they've been around for decades. In recent years, they've gone mainstream, attracting big-name underwriters and investors and raising a record amount of IPO monies. But now this is in an ETF. Is that correct?
Yeah. They're getting the Deutsche Banks, the Credit Suisse, the Goldman Sachs of the world to underwrite them. They're getting these retired or mostly retired corporate executives to fill in, at least, you know, on a startup or interim basis. But hey, they're raising $41 billion so far this year, and that's more than the last 10 years combined. $29 billion of it since just July 1st. So the 109 deals so far on top of 54 last year. They're listing on stock exchanges with, again, the aim of raising money to buy others. About 40%, Melody, of this year's IPOs, volume anyway, has come from these SPACs.
Wow, that's a lot, I think.
Yep. It
seems like a lot. And the thing of it is with these SPACs, I can't even imagine. So mainly they're probably, you know, money is being funneled to, of course, I'm not saying that, but to whom they choose. And I can't imagine what the fees, I can't imagine the amount of money that is being created for their own pocketbooks.
Well, these underwriting fees for things like this are typically outrageous anyway. Yeah. If those numbers were better disclosed, I think there'd be a lot more investors, and not just institutional. I mean, retail, smaller investors, who'd be beyond, you know, eye raising. I think there'd be a lot of shouting, a lot of calls for reform.
When we talk about these large companies, and I'm sure there's more than just five. But so far, there have been at least five companies that have violated U.S. regulations for the PPP loans that came out in the beginning of the year. And a lot of these companies, mostly in the energy sector, have collectively paid more than $52 million in penalties for violating the clean air and other environmental laws. Each secured a sizable loan within a month of the PPP, the Paycheck Protection Program, that was launched back in April. And, of course, it was supposed to assist small businesses, but we all know how that went. And, of course, accusations of giving preferential treatment to the powerful and well-connected, we know how that went. More than 7,000 oil, gas, and petrochemical companies have received a total of $3 billion to $7 billion in the PPP money. Businesses with past environmental violations that are not barred from receiving the loans. Again, it's the same thing, Dave. One of the aid recipients, Country Mark Refining and Logistics, it's a subsidiary of an Indiana oil company, Country Mark, agreed in 2013 to pay more than $18 million to settle violations, and I guess they're back at it again.
They got 5 to 10 mil in PPP loans, help retain its nearly 400 employees. You have Fluid Recovery Services. They got between 350,000 and 1 million. They settled. Now, this is going back 7 years, paid $83,000 in penalties and required to spend $30 million to upgrade its facilities at treatment plants across Pennsylvania. And there's Pacific Ethanol, California Biofuel Company, there's Permafix Environmental Services in Atlanta, and Utah-based Performance Diesel. Again, $1 million, no more than $1 million in loans, paid $1.1 million to settle alleged violations of the Clean Air Act. So,
well, you know, Google is expected to be sued. The U.S. Justice Department, state attorneys general, they're going to sue them this week for alleged antitrust abuses. Now, this would kind of mark a dramatic escalation of Washington's fight to rein in Silicon Valley's giants. The Justice Department, which has been probing Google for 16 months, circulated text of a proposed complaint just last week. Now, this complaint could come later this week or maybe just after Columbus Day holiday next Monday. The Justice Department and state prosecutors also reportedly spoke Friday afternoon to go over the antitrust suit. You know, what do you think they're going to do, Dave? Fine them $1 billion or $2 billion and, you know, these
trillion-dollar
companies will gladly comply and say, now get out of my way so we can recover what we just paid.
Yes, I hope their general counsel is handing out containers of, what's it called, paraffin, that wax that acts as a cover over your hands. Mm-hmm. To withstand some of those ruler smacks that they're going to be getting. I can tell you one thing that almost certainly won't happen, and that's the breakup of the company. I don't think anyone is expecting that, although I suspect that there are some aggrieved shareholders out there that might like that. Yeah, it will be it'll be interesting, particularly some of these state attorney generals, or attorneys general, I guess is the correct way to say it, some of whom have filed their own complaints. I suspect some of them could be willing to take this a tad farther than perhaps the Justice Department, who I'm sure is looking for a major fine in the billions of dollars, but it'll be fun to see how it, I hope it'll be fun to see how it turns out.
They should have done this, 10, 15 years ago?
Yep, before, when it gets too big,
they're just going after some bucks, and especially I think the states like Texas and maybe some other states that, you know, file a separate complaint, they need the money, so why not go? I don't know, but I don't think it would be resolved too soon. And was it Apple or Google that just settled with Europe, with England?
No.
Was it Apple?
Apple or Facebook?
You know, what difference does it make? It's just, like, what's the point? What's the point of it all? Because there isn't anything that's going to change.
Life goes on. Check written, life goes on. Return to old practices.
Yeah. Well, you know, we just got a couple of minutes left of the program. And, you know, I think this is interesting because I don't know. I mean, everybody wants to be outside if they go out to eat and so forth. And everybody wants to socialize outside, but what are we going to do in this colder weather? And so what's happening is it's prompting an expensive and environmentally questionable rush on outdoor heaters. I wouldn't worry about the environmentally questionable, but they are expensive. You have heating outdoor patios, you know, it's going to be a new big cost for businesses and even homeowners who might get it, you know, if they want to have family over and so forth. And about 50% of full-service restaurants say they are taking actions to extend outdoor dining seasons, including patio heaters. Other businesses like ski lodges are also buying more outdoor heaters. Well, they're going to be gone soon, so if you're interested in buying any, you better get one quick. Jeremy Sasson, president of Michigan-based Heirloom Hospitality, which runs the three restaurants in the Detroit area, said he increased the number of heaters he uses from 8 or 10 in previous years to 25 this year. Mm-hmm. Now, the cost of fuel for heating, which is just one of the numerous wholly new categories of cost for restaurants, is about the same as some of his rents. He says he's willing to spend the money to stay open. He employs about 200 and 250 people, so it does help to stabilize the jobs within the restaurants and in that area. So I don't know if you have anything to add to that. We have about 30 seconds, Dave.
No, not a whole lot. I mean, electric heaters may appear cleaner, but it turns out that propane is the second cleanest behind natural gas, according to the U.S. Energy Information Administration.
All right.
There you have it.
Well, you know, people can't get freezers or refrigerators or a lot of other products, so I don't know where these are made, but they're going to go quick. 1-800-375-4188. We have gold for you. Give us a call, and until then, until tomorrow, be safe, good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye.
Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.